Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a Swangles in Fort
Lauderdale. I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Fan.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing support. We know you have a lot of choices out there, and we're flattered that you chose to spend some time with us. We couldn't do it without the tremendous support of our sponsors. True Hemp Science has been nice enough to send me over some products. They got me on this bioactive silicate, which is pretty interesting. It's a relatively new product out there. It will alkalize your body. It kills bacteria and biofilm. It kills nanobacteria, which winds up clogging arteries. It detoxifies the body. It alkalizes the body and raises the pH level to where it should be, which is 7.0. Most of us really aren't there. And it changes the conditions inside you for to make it a less hospitable place for diseases to kick off. So I would suggest taking a look at it. Go to truehempscience.com/macroaggressions. And look at bioactive silicate. It's about $40, comes in a 2-ounce bottle like this. You add it to a jug of distilled water, mix it all up, and you just drink like 2 ounces in the morning, 2 ounces in the evening, and that's it. And it will take, it took me about 5 weeks to get through it. I highly recommend it. If you want to pair it with something else, they have, they're making the best hemp-based CBD out there. No kidding. They really are. It's a small company based in Austin, Texas. Do yourself a favor. Check out the number 19 and the number 41. That's a hemp-based CBD. It'll kind of help with any sort of inflammation that you have, but also give you a little bit of boost as well. And on your way out, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself a little bit of money. And any support for the sponsors goes to help to support the show as well. And we certainly do appreciate it, as well as our other sponsor, My Patriot Supply. I'm telling you, it's coming. It's really coming. We've done shows about food. We've done shows about supply chain issues. We've done Union of the Unwanted shows about food and supply chain. We've got big problems. And the food situation is real. We've been screaming about it for, you know, about a year now, and it all sounded kind of theoretical when we first started talking about it. But you just turn on the news, just take a look around. There's food manufacturing facilities that are blowing up. I don't know, directed energy, maybe. I hate to put on my tinfoil hat, but I mean, I've never seen such insanity in my life. The number of food processing plants that are either getting struck by airplanes, which that's happened a couple times, or just bursting into flames. Look, these people are plotting something. We might not know all the details of it, but they are plotting something. I would suggest that you get yourself prepared well in advance. You do not want to be the last person to figure this out. You've got an advantage. You're watching or listening to this show and you're getting all kinds of weird information. We're talking about strange things. You're going to hear about this months before anybody else. Your friends and neighbors will never know what hit them, but you will. And if you knew what was coming, had the information and chose not to act on it, oh, you are going to really, really be kicking yourself. So do this. Go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Take a look around. You can find a 4-week supply of food. You can find a 3-month supply of food. There's discounts on all of that. You can take care of everything that you need in about 10 minutes online. Done. Have it shipped to you if you are so inclined and if you are a nice person. And if your family thinks you're maybe a little bit insane and they live kind of far away from you, do them a favor. Order them a couple buckets of food. Have it sent to them. They won't know how much they appreciate it until things get really bad. And look, what's the worst that could happen? You know, you've got extra food laying around. We should be so fortunate. So do yourself a favor. The links are going to be in the description. Preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Let's be proactive. Well, I'm excited to have our guest. He's a new guest to the show, but he's not a new guest because he's been on Union of the Unwanted. I've been on his show. It's Chef Matt Pierce. How are you, Matt? What's going on?
I'm doing great, Charlie. Thanks for having me on. Talk about imposter syndrome right now, right? I'm sitting here with you. I've been listening to your podcast for 2 years. Union of the Unwanted for, you know, a good part of that. Converse back and forth. Great, gracious enough to come on my podcast. This is pretty awesome. What you were saying with the last sponsor there,
yeah,
right on the money, man. I got a small wall of that stuff down in the basement, and I hope to never have to use it.
Yeah, exactly. But if you did have to use it, something tells me that your version of that food would be the best because you would find a way. as we're sitting right here, I have a box of what you have sent me, which is Chef Matt Pierce is also the owner of Granite State Spice Blends. You can go to granitestatespiceblends.com and check out what he's got. Oh, you know, I've just got some miso shroomy right here. I've got hot magic dust. I've got Taco Tuesday. You've got good stuff, man. And I appreciate you sending it my way. I'm not much of a cook. You get food poisoning if you eat my food. But my wife is a great cook and she loves all of this stuff. So I said, listen, we've got it all. In fact, you were nice enough to send me when you guys were sort of working on formulas, you sent the Taco Tuesday recipe and we had that one night and everyone liked it. So I'm grateful for you.
And it was your feedback on kicking it up a little bit that version 2.0 came out. So if you haven't used the new one yet, try it out. It's going to be pretty good. It's my best seller because I think everybody is pretty much, you know, in a safe space with tacos, right? Ground beef, taco seasoning mix. That stuff you can use at like salt and pepper. It's they're basically all dry rubs. So don't feel like you're going to be, you know, tied down to just ground beef. Get crazy with that stuff. You know?
Cool.
So I have a lot of fun making it. It's a great little side hustle. I started it in October and it's just kind of really taken off. I spent vacation college in order to start a business. You look like you froze up a minute. Did you get all that?
I got part of it. Yeah. My connection is saying it was unstable.
Hey, is what it is. But yeah, you use it like salt and pepper. I started the business for my daughters. I don't want them to have to rely on thinking that they need an education through colleges in order to start their business. They can just, you know, do something and come up with a passion project and turn it into something. So I run it out of farmers markets and print artisan craft fairs around New Hampshire and I'm having a great time with it. It's awesome.
It's great, man. I love it. I'm glad. And it shows that you can do these things. You don't have to, you know, quit your day job. You can go out and start a side project and have a little fun doing it. You're obviously in the food industry, and that's why I wanted to have you on, was to talk about all of this stuff and talk about some of these new foods. I don't even know if food is the right word to use to describe them. We've got gene edited. We've got genetically modified. This sounds like Frankenstein stuff. You mentioned cell agriculture and things like that. What have you found on these bizarre food, these new versions of food? Like, where are we going with this?
So cell agriculture is basically the name that's been given to it, the fancy name. It's basically lab grown meat. They're growing stuff on trellises, and it's just these hanging globules, and they turn it into meat. There's a whole bunch of different companies that I'll talk about as we go into this, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of the think tanks that are pushing this stuff out there, these educational institutions. But basically, Charlie, choice is an illusion right now, right? We have no choice. We walk into the supermarket, there's 10 companies that own everything from aisle 1 to aisle 21. Every product that you can imagine. I mean, people don't even know that they think that Oreos come from Oreo Cookie Factory, when it's a company called Mondelez. It's a company out of Spain that's, you know, manufacturing all kinds of foods and all kinds of other products too. They don't just stop with food. Procter & Gamble is a big one. Unilever is the biggest one, right? So Unilever is creating a whole bunch of stuff. And what are they doing with the byproducts from their industries? They're bringing it over to the food industry. They're sharing stuff because they're only concerned about the bottom line. They're not concerned about people's health. Like I was saying, everything, 10 companies, Kellogg, Nestle, Mondelez, General Mills, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, Mars, Danone. I know you did, or Danone or whatever it is, right? They make Danone yogurt. You had mentioned them a few episodes back in one of the food episodes that you did. The food system, it's gone from us eating off the land, growing our own food, buying food that was grown in a normal way, cows that were pasture raised and crop rotation and animal rotation, to now where we're just consuming chemicals, hormones, and just living through these unsustainable practices. It really all started, in my opinion, from what I've been looking at this through the lens of a culinary guy, is at the what's known as the CIA, the other CIA, which is the Culinary Institute of America. So this CIA, Culinary Institute of America, is in Hyde Park, New York. It didn't always start there, right? So I'm just going to give you a brief history of the CIA. If you want to get into it, like a deeper history of it, I'm not the guy to do that. I was taught by 3 chefs that were CIA graduates that all told me, don't go there. Go out in the field and work with people, pick their knowledge and grow yourself that way. You don't have to get that formal education. So I'm grateful that I have, you know, the knowledge that I have from the people who went there, but there's, you know, crazy stuff going on behind the scenes there. So it was founded in 1946, 1 year before the real CIA was founded. And it was founded after the war, right? World War II was over. The GIs were coming back and they needed to do something. They needed careers. So they started this in New Haven. It was called the New Haven Restaurant Institute. And what ended up happening was 2 ladies founded. I can't think of their names off the top of my head. It really doesn't matter. But one of them, I don't know what was going on, but her husband had passed away, left her a bunch of money. She started the New Haven Restaurant Institute. They needed a place. She ended up marrying the guy who was the president of Yale at the time. And Yale ended up giving them a spot in New Haven. And then they changed their name. They changed their name to the Connecticut Restaurant Institute. Mm-hmm. Everything was going well, right? They were blowing up. They had about 1,000 students when they said, okay, we need to move. So when they moved to Hyde Park, New York. What they took over was a seminary, I guess, for the Jesuits. So they took over a whole Jesuit campus. I don't know what they did with the Jesuits. You know, the Jesuits probably took that land over from Indians that they massacred and displaced somewhere. So there's a lot of sketchy, you know, sketchy history behind all this. CIAchef.edu is their website. You can go and check them out. Take a look at their brand new logo too. If you do check them out, CIAchef.edu, their brand new logo, their whole logo used to be wheat in a circle with the Culinary Institute of America written inside of it. Mm-hmm. Dude, their new logo looks just like the head of Baphomet. It's got the torch and then it's still supposed to be wheat, but the way the wheat is shaped, it looks like the head of Baphomet. I don't want to get too tinfoil hatty on here, but I just think that's crazy. Wow. So So this is where all of this stuff is happening, in my opinion, right? So they have this conference. This conference is called Menus of Change. It's been going on since 2012. I've been to three of these conferences, two times as an attendant, sitting in the stands, watching these people talk, one time behind the scenes, actually cooking. In 2012, I actually did the cooking and serving the lunch to all these people, the who's who of the food world, right? Mm-hmm. And they went from, okay, we have to figure out a better sustainable way to make meat obsolete, I guess, or a smaller portion of the plate in vegetables and grains and legumes, the star attraction of the plate. So we worked on all kinds of recipes of cutting chili with mushrooms, and we worked with the Mushroom Council. There's a lobbying council in Washington that specifically, helps mushroom growers, kind of work through, legislation and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So we went from mushrooms in the chili. We went from, roasting off whole heads of cauliflower, and some of this stuff looked really good when you get into like Romesco, which is like a green kind of spiky cauliflower. Some of the bean dishes we were doing were great, and there's a lot of, argument. No, you shouldn't eat beans. You shouldn't eat this. And, vegetables are bullshit and meat is the way to go. That didn't matter. They had an agenda to push and they were going for it. So they started this in 2012, 2013. I went as an attendant, and it was still kind of on the same path of, we need to, plant forward sustainability. The climate's dying. The same crap from Club of Rome and what they put out in the 70s with limits to growth. It's right. All that same stuff. We're killing our environment. I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought for a second. My mouth is moving faster than my brain is working. So the Culinary Institute of America and Harvard School of Health had teamed up, and that's how I got involved with, the cooking for it and going as an attendant, is because I was working for Harvard at the time. I worked for them for 10 years, and we were actually a test pilot for Menus of Change and creating all these plant-based, plant-based meals and menus and whatnot. So, to Stanford got involved. Like I said, the Harvard School of Public Health got involved. And it's just a group that's just absolutely trying to take over. So what I like what you do on a lot of your episodes is you break down who the people are in these groups. So I just want to break down a few of these people. So this Menus of Change group is made up of two committees. These two committees, one is a business committee, and you're not going to find anybody heavy hitting in that committee. There's all kinds of, propagandist kind of media type people. What you will find is when you get into the scientific committee, that's it. These are tech geeks that are running everything. I don't know if they have a revenge thing going on from when they were kids and when they were bullied. And that's why we're seeing all this wokeness, and now it's moving into, real life. But you got this one guy, Walter Willett. People can go and Google him, and they can Google Walter Willett controversy. One thing I like about this guy is he's pushed back on the healthy plate. The only thing I don't like about him, they got the new plate that did away with the food pyramid. They moved that over to the side, and it's called My Plate. The thing I don't like about what he's doing with this plate is he's trying to push meat off to the side in small, small amounts. They say small amounts, but this guy would be happy if meat just never existed. And he pushed back on that. And there's a lot of controversy around this guy. People can go and look it up. I'm not going to take up the whole podcast with going through all the conspiracies, I guess, with him and who's argued against him. So another person is going to be Martin Blome. Martin Blome is John Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. So John Hopkins is involved with this, right?
Automatic disqualification.
Exactly. The other person that's involved with this is a lady named Molly Brown. So she's the chief science officer for a company called Six Grain. And what Six Grain does is Six Grain finds large plots of farmland, and they install their systems of tracking the wheat, tracking the corn, tracking everything that the farmer is growing, how their combine should be run, when to plant, how to plant. Everything is all tracked out on a grid. So they're pretty much controlling everything. So they can shut, you know, one click of the button, their whole system goes down, you know. Mm-hmm. You got companies like John Deere that are making tractors for these farmers that have proprietary software systems in them, that if these farmers need their tractors fixed, they can't go anywhere but a John Deere dealership. So this Six Grain company is doing exactly that, and partnered with BASF. They're partnered with Syngenta. And if people don't know who Syngenta is, think of Monsanto. That's their main competition is Monsanto. They're just disgusting companies. And the other one that Six Grain is partnering with is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Yeah. So all these people are running around all in the same circles. Then you got the last person I'll mention, and there's a whole list of these board members, right? And if you go digging in, you find out where they're from. Russell Walker. He's worked for the State Department. He's worked for the World Bank. He's worked for the SEC. He's worked for the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the International Finance Corporation, and Microsoft. Guys, straight up deep state.
That's and the worst resume so I've ever heard in my life.
So because he has a PhD at the end of his name, he's sitting on the science committee. This guy is the business guy. He should be on the business committee. So it's all, you know, whacked out. What it should be is this is the propaganda arm, and this is the arm that's really making shit go down, you know? So yeah, Menus of Change is super, super, super messed up. So what you'll see besides these people, when you look into Menus of Change and you go to the website, I think it's like menusofchange.org or something like that, are all these companies that support it. And you got companies like the Unilever that I had mentioned before. You got, you know, the Lentil Board, you got the Mushroom Council, you got the Potato Farmers Association. You got other companies like Oatly Milk, which is the most disgusting shit that I've ever, I can't even imagine drinking this stuff, right? But what you also have here is you also have these companies that are into what is known as cellular agriculture. So I want to get into, I'm just going to find here on my notes here, I wrote some of these bullet talking points down because there's just so much that I would never, ever remember for all this. And I think they do that intentionally too, right? These corporate backings will fund so many of these companies and then let all these companies duke it out. And then, you know, whichever one they decide to pick is the one that's going to win. So you got one company sponsoring Menus of Change called Ayla Farms. They do lab grown beef. And if you go to their website, they show you a picture of what their beef looks like. And it's supposed to be a strip steak. And the only way you can tell that it was supposed to be a strip steak is because it has a fat cap on it and it kind of has that slender look that a New York strip steak has. So their head guy, right, is a guy named Mark Buckley. He's the guy that's there's the head, the leadership teams is what they call them. And those are kind of the tech geeks. And if you look at their picture, it looks like the Google, you know, programmer's yearbook of 2020, you know, it's just a bunch of nerds, glasses. They all have this kind of frumpy look with the pot bellies and everything. And they think they're cool and they're drinking their IPAs and they think they're having a good time. And they don't know who they just sold their company out to. So this guy, Mark Buckley, he's an environmentalist and he is one of the chief food advisors for the World Economic Forum and the United Nations.
Oh,
so automatic disqualification there.
Yeah.
Karen Nyberg, she's an astronaut. She's an astronaut, which I thought was completely weird. Why is an astronaut doing this? If you go back to the lady that I had mentioned before, Molly, what's her name? Molly Brown from Six Grain. Six Grain is also partnered with NASA. And NASA has an organization out of the University of Maryland called NASA Harvest. And what they're doing is they're monitoring all of the farms from space. And they're tracking soil, they're tracking growth, they're tracking how much you're harvesting. I have a little, probably 25 foot by 15 or so, 20 foot garden in my yard on the side over here. Are they watching my garden too? I don't know. Luckily, I get all my seeds from, you know, sources around me that, you know, save seeds and whatnot. So, right. You know, hopefully not. But can they, you know, dial in when that purchase was made with that credit card, zoom in and see what you're growing? You know, so that's scary shit. I think that's why there's an astronaut on there. And then one name that keeps popping up in all this is Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
So
he's no good.
Crazy.
He's involved in all the anything United Nations related. I mean, they must have him on camera with a goat or something, because he is their go-to guy when it comes to and a huge, tremendous hypocrite on top of that too, as he's flying off to Europe to accept his environmental award on a private jet and then partying in the south of France on the fourth largest yacht in the world that pollutes more than an entire Italian village. And he's accepting his environmental awards and patting himself on the back like a douchebag.
Who would have thought that the homeless kid from Growing Pains would have, you know, turned into what he turned into? Crazy. I can remember as a kid watching Growing Pains and seeing him as one of the characters living in Mike Seaver's janitor's closet, absolutely crazy that all this is happening. Yeah. So his name shows up everywhere, right? So like I said, the board of directors are the problems behind all this. Supermeat is another company. Supermeat is partnered with a company called Ajinomoto. What Ajinomoto makes is MSG. What they also make, and it's a Japanese company, what they also make is a chemical called transglutaminase. What transglutaminase is meat glue. So you can take a protein, like a piece of fish, and a protein, like a piece of pork, put a little transglutaminase on it, slap it together, and in a minutes, you have a fused piece of meat. I've seen chefs, and there's a restaurant called Moto out of Chicago. This is years ago. He was messing around with all this plant-based stuff, and he wanted to create something that looked like haddock or a whitefish, a nice piece of cod, right? New England cod. So he would take the tofu and slice it razor thin, and then put this meat glue in between each of it, and then slap the pieces together, and then roast it like you would roast a piece of fish. And it flaked and did everything like cod did. So they've been working on this stuff for years and years and years. So Ajinomoto is a seriously dangerous company, especially with the MSG. So that stuff is freaking giving people headaches and slowly killing us, you know. Yeah. Simulate is another one. They're doing chicken tenders. It's pretty gross. I don't know anything much about them, except they have a website that makes your computer look like you have a virus when you log into it. It's kind of weird. And that's Simulate, and it's kind of going with all that tech geeky stuff.
Well, it's going to make you feel like you have a computer virus in your in your stomach when you get done eating this fake chicken fingers that they're making.
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully everything that goes in comes out okay, because I don't think it will. What they're putting, what they're doing, and what they're doing is they're taking and I've looked, and I'll get into this in a little bit, is they're taking a cell and just growing it in a bath, and it keeps growing. And I don't know if there, and I haven't seen any sort of what the nutritional breakdown is of it. Is it the same amount of protein? You assume it is. You take their word for it that it is. It's just so much behind it that there's so many questions. So then I stumbled across this company called Perfect Day. They're the grand sponsor of the whole Menus of Change at the Culinary Institute of America Summit. And Perfect Day, Leonardo DiCaprio is another one that's one of the, you know, influencers. Two guys made up the company, a couple of vegans that wanted to eat dairy and wanted to eat ice cream. And what they are is a company that does dairy, and they sell their dairy off to different ice cream companies, yogurt companies that you've never heard of. All these, I don't know, if, you know, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, we're going to end up hearing of these companies like their household names. But right now, they're obviously getting funded from somewhere big to support something as big as the Menus of Change summit. So this company, Perfect Day, the executive team, okay, the board of directors, the head guy on the board of directors is Bob Iger of Disney. He is the Disney CEO that basically made Disney into what it is now. And when he stepped down, they went really woke, and now they're, you know, running into problems. Mm-hmm. But he was the one that acquired Pixar. He's the one that got all the Marvel movies on board. Just a ruthless businessman. And he's invested in this company and sits on the board of directors with three other guys that are in investment firms that I'm sure, if you trace it all back, will lead to BlackRock and Vanguard and these companies, because all of these investment firms are that are investing in these companies and these people that sit on the board of directors that are in the investment firms, they're just investing in companies like this. So there's got to be branches. And I'm sure if I dug in a little more, I'd figure it out and come across it. So yeah, like I said, they're the Grand Platinum sponsor. They make lab grown milk. They make one milk, right? And I don't know, when I go into a coffee shop and if I ordered an espresso, I'd get the cream on the top. Sometimes, you know, they do the fun thing with a shape, mm-hmm. like a heart and all that. They just use regular milk and they steam it up and they foam it and everything works fine. This milk is so irregular that they make their own milk called barista milk. So there's different grades of milk that they're making. Like, I'm sure they make a heavy cream equivalent, but they have to make a milk that's barista milk because it won't do the same thing that regular milk does. Wow. And with that being said, this is the first company in this space to secure any kind of approval from the FDA of what's called GRAS status, G-R-A-S. And what GRAS status is that's the status given to yellow dye number 5, red 40, whatever all these shit chemicals are that they're putting in foods, generally recognized as safe.
Generally recognized as safe. So not safe.
Generally recognized as safe.
Generally. No, it's sort of safe.
Yeah. Go and throw it in. Yeah. Getting, you know, back to the spices that I do, right? One of the reasons that I started that whole spice thing besides my daughters and everything was everything on the supermarket shelves is shit. You find this stuff sitting in these BPA-filled plastic bottles that have been sitting there for who knows how long, that have been sitting in some warehouse somewhere in who knows what kind of conditions, what kind of heat. And when you look at the back of the ingredients, you find one ingredient that I find consistent across all these like blended mixes, whether it's Goya or the shit brands is good shit, chicken shit, bullshit, catchy names and everything. But they all have what's called silicon dioxide in it. And what silicon dioxide is a little packet that you find in your shoebox that says do not eat. The stuff that's in that packet is silicon dioxide. The difference is the stuff in the shoebox is in like a pellet form, mm-hmm. and the stuff that's in the food is in a powder form. And what it does is it takes all the moisture out of any food that you have. So you can store those spices forever without them starting to cake up. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to avoid all that. I didn't want to eat any of that. The FDA says if your total weight is, or if that amount of product is less than 2% of the total weight of the product, it's safe to go in there, because when you consume it, it's supposed to pass right through you. If it's sucking up all the water in your system, it's not passing right through you. No. If it's sucking up water out of shoes, if it's sucking up water out of spices, that stuff's staying in your gut. And that's just my opinion. I don't see it, you know, being any different than that. So perfect day, Bob Iger, bunch of nerds. FDA or FDA approval for GRAS status. That led me down the rabbit hole, Charlie, of what's called cellag.org. Super, super techie website. Really nice graphics. You open up the website, cellag.org. You have two cows that are overlooking a big city, like a smart city almost, mm-hmm. like New York City. Right. And their claim to fame, the guy that founded this group, it's a 501c3 nonprofit or whatever it is. It's, you know, it's a nonprofit.
Right.
The claim to fame for this group is they've designed the perfect facility, and they go over it in their plans, but it's all such a bunch of word salad. You'd never get to find out how the meat is made, you know, or how the sausage is made in this case. So it's supposed to be the most perfect, like, system of making this stuff, and it shows the conveyor belts, and it's gunk is what it is. So they're taking a cell and they put it in the machine and they incubate it and they show how it comes off of the assembly line. It's just absolutely nuts when I take a look at it and look at their website. They have a shop on their website. In their shop, you can buy stuff to support the business, and you can buy an artist rendered picture that's about 7 feet long by 5 feet tall of this facility for only $180,000. It's nuts.
So if you're looking to launder your money through art, here's a good way to do it.
Exactly. And it's like I said, the whole website, Charlie, is just word salad. There's nothing that makes sense. The CIA is all behind us. There's Culinary Institute of America. When you start digging into cellag.org and its European counterpart, cellularagriculture.eu, you find that it's all linked to the United Nations, and the United Nations is pushing this shit right down our throats, and they're not going to stop. All these plans, like you got companies, these big companies like Aramark, and Aramark saying that they're going to reduce their greenhouse gases by 25%, and it hits that magic year of 2030. We're going to do this by 2030. My day job, I work for a contracted food service company. It's a small New Hampshire-based contracted food service company. I don't understand how Aramark is going to do that when these contracted food service companies own nothing. We're contracted out by the person who has the building, that owns the kitchen, that owns the equipment. All we do is give 5-year loans, because it's 5-year contracts, to get new equipment into the place if the place needs new equipment. And we basically, for all of our clients, give them a 0% interest loan for 5 years. Aramark might own their corporate headquarters in Philadelphia, but I doubt it. I bet they're renting that space. They just moved from a skyscraper into it, and they downsized it to a smaller building. So if you have no buildings to reduce greenhouse gases from, what greenhouse gases are you going to emit? They're just giving you an illusion that they're going to do that. It would have to be whatever buildings that they're in and their companies are contracting them, would the facilities department would have to say, okay, we're going to change the exhaust system. We're going to change, you know, this method of heat coming in, and we're going to go from, you know, gas to solar and go from there. You got another company like Guckenheimer that wants to have all of their menus by 2025, 55% plant-based. So they're going to get over the 50%. The majority of it is going to be a plant-based menu. And I'm sure that the next 5 years after that, their 5-year plan is to go 100% plant-based. And when I think plant-based, I don't think Beyond Burgers, Impossible Burgers, and Beyond Impossible. I don't know if you've watched that documentary yet. Mm-mm. Absolutely awesome documentary. I recommend watching it. If you Google it, you'll find it. I can't remember. It's on like Hulu or one of those, not Netflix. It's either Hulu or Amazon or something like that. Beyond Impossible. Okay. Absolutely fantastic documentary. So getting back actually to cellag.org, the guy that founded this company, this nonprofit, he put out a pamphlet through Harvard, 90 reasons to consider cellular agriculture. Let me just give you a few of these reasons.
Please.
So yeah, no pathogen contamination. So, I mean, what does that mean? If it's food, it's going to grow pathogens. If you keep food out between, you know, at least the recommendation is between 40 and 140, that's considered the danger zone when you're talking about food safety and whatnot. I think those numbers are a little extreme, and that's just kind of the government and the National Restaurant Association covering their ass so that when people do get sick, they got, you know, they got someone to blame before they go and start, you know, a major recall and all that. But you got, you know, the temperature, stuff that can get messed with. Mm-hmm. You got time that can get messed with, right? So it's either time or temperature that's controlling the food. After it's cooked and it sits out, is it not going to grow any pathogen? Maybe they're talking about just the process of making it. But if the process of making it, if they're making live animals, don't they need refrigeration? Right? They're making basically dead live animals that are dead, and they're basically printing everything out like it's a friggin' 3D printer. So no pathogen contamination. That's a lie. Longer shelf life. If it's meat, it's going to have a normal meat shelf life, right? Your oxygen is going to hit it and your red hamburger is going to turn brown. So I don't understand how they're talking about longer shelf life. You know what has a long shelf life? When you know the farmer in the next town over that grows chickens, that raises chickens, that raises pigs, that raises cattle, and you buy their meat and you hold it in your fridge, you're going to get a long shelf life. This stuff is made who knows where, shipped who knows where. Like pork nowadays, since Smithfield got bought out by China, they raise those pigs here, then they slaughter them, they ship them over to China to process them, and then they ship them back.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's, just a funny story with that too, with the pigs and the way they ship it. China uses everything, right? We don't eat everything, but we use everything, and we let the byproducts go to other industries. A lot of the folks in China will eat everything, and what they ended up doing was they needed to do something with the pig's intestines and basically the asshole, the bung, they call it. Mm-hmm. So it's called pork bung, and you can buy pork bungs. And what they were doing was they were cutting it up and selling it as calamari. So if you go to a restaurant,
I heard calamari. I just heard that. I just heard about that like a week ago. I was on OBDM. Joe was talking about that. He said that they're selling buttholes as calamari.
This has been going on for years. So if you go into a restaurant and you order the squid, the calamari, and you get these big giant circles that aren't very thick and super, super rubbery, chances are you're eating a pig's asshole.
I thought that was just limited to hot dogs. Now it's in your calamari.
No. There's lips in the hot dogs, not just assholes.
Well, yeah.
It's an assholes. So no added hormones. The whole thing is basically a hormone. All they have to do is adjust, right? When they're growing this stuff. No fecal contamination. Okay. That I can see, right? But you know, how many times are we ordering beef and there's, you know, fecal contamination because the cow is, you know, smothered in shit? That's just another way to shut down the small agriculture, local farmer. So let's see here. No avian flu. They're killing off chickens. So, hey, let's just end chicken farming altogether, right?
Yeah.
They come into people's houses and they're killing chickens because of bird flu. You know, I want to put chickens in my backyard here, and I'm probably going to do it towards the middle end of the summer. And, you know, if some law enforcement officer came and tried to destroy the chickens, I don't think that would go over too well on social media when I start, you know, blasting that off. So they need to be careful with the chickens, unless they, you know, avian flu is the next pandemic. Cause I think Joe Biden was just talking about a second pandemic is coming. Yes, you better watch out, you know, unreal. You know,
on natural calendar. Disaster.
Yeah, exactly. It all is. It's all on the freaking calendar. It's absolutely ridiculous. And then they talk about farmer injustice. Like this is gonna cure farmer injustice. You're literally taking farmers' jobs away. You're literally taking cattle ranchers' jobs away. You're literally taking pig farmer jobs away, chicken farmer jobs away. One of the farmers markets I do, the guy that sits next to me, he sells his chicken, he sells his eggs, and now he's starting to dabble in pork. They're about to eliminate him altogether if they keep moving forward with this. And they're gonna just keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. It's absolutely crazy. So that's kind of my dig in to all of this kind of cellular agriculture.
United Nations, man, you know, they say that they want to be on the side of feeding people and helping starvation and all this. It's always this altruistic cover story. But the truth is they want to starve everybody out. They found a way to do it. This cell agriculture. I mean, yeah, they'll say, well, it's just technology, right? We have to embrace technology.
It's the new science.
It's the science. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. It's the science. Yeah. We have to embrace this, but it's fake science. It's not anchored in any sort of, it doesn't make any sense to me. We don't have a problem with agriculture, with raising, pigs and cattle and chickens. We've been doing this for literally thousands of years. We're pretty good at it. It's not like we just woke up one day and forgot how to do it. And just, you know, look, I'm not anti-technology and I'm willing to listen, but when the list, like you mentioned, the list of people that are behind it, it's the worst group of people ever, right? It's just all these people that have ties to the World Economic Forum, and they have ties to Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and really just some of the worst institutions and organizations on this entire planet. Just forgive me if I don't get super enthusiastic about them trying to save me with food when I know what they're really about. They're all depopulation outfits. So I wonder about this. I wonder about, maybe you can talk about this soy epidemic. Now, we know that right now in America, 89% of soy is genetically modified. I think in Brazil, that number is even higher. It's everywhere. Now, I don't know that soy in and of itself is necessarily the worst thing for you, but GMO soy can't be good. And it seems like they're stuffing it in everything. And you're around food more than anybody. When did this pivot to soy start to take off?
I think it has to do with monocropping and the fact that the soybean is so easy to grow. And they've just figured out, I'm sure, you know, Monsanto has figured out how to treat the soybean like they treat the corn, and they keep it, you know, able to stay away from pests. They keep it able to be resilient to hot sun temperatures, and just grow in abundance. So soy became a cheap alternative as a filler. I mean, there were times where my day job, I go around to schools, K-12 schools, and the contract food service company that I work for, we take over the cafeterias and we try and introduce kids to a different way of eating. And we try and introduce kids to, you know, different foods. I'll run around the noodle bowls. I'll run different hamburger specials, stuff like that. And we're trying to train lunch ladies to take better care of what we're feeding in the schools, because the programs are there. And then we work with, you know, the school to fill out all the right paperwork so that they can get their vegetables and whatnot. And you will see in the schools soy in everything, soy in the chicken patties, soy in the hamburgers. So the USDA has what's called the brown box program, and they'll ship stuff like hamburgers, turkey breasts, regular ground beef. They have a vegetable, fruit and vegetable program that's actually run by the Department of Defense, believe it or not. Which
what
is
could possibly
weird.
Go wrong with that?
Nothing. And you'll see, even in the burger patties that they send these pre-cooked burger patties, because a lot of these lunch ladies, they've taken the cooking away from them, right? It's no longer, you know, grandma that comes in, needs something to do during the day. So she's whipping up meatloaf and whipping up, you know, American chop suey and whatnot for the kids, or goulash if you're from a different part of the country. I guess it's called both. So they rely on these heavily, heavily processed foods. And soy just seems to be a tasteless, odorless, colorless additive that they can add to the foods, just like corn is and everything, right? Corn syrup, corn starch, you know, the whole nine yards. So I think it's just one of those cash crops. I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to it, except they stumbled upon something that they can, you know, fatten the bottom line with. Because that's what it all boils down to. They don't give a shit about health. They give a shit about the bottom line. They give a shit about their shareholders and their boards that are, you know, trying to drive sales. And I don't know how sustainable it is for companies every year. And every company that I've ever worked for, I've worked for Aramark, I worked for Harvard. The company I work for now, not so much. I've noticed they're pretty cool, and I have just the dream day job. But every year it was, what can we do to make this number bigger? What can we do to make this number bigger? And don't beat the number by too much, because then you're going to lose that money. So figure out where to spend it. It's a crazy game.
It really is. What do we know about you mentioned like the Impossible foods and the plant-based foods that they're putting out. I saw that the Impossible Whopper at Burger King, though not necessarily a dietary alternative, it's only 5% fewer calories than a traditional Whopper. So it's not like low calorie or anything like that, but it had 16 million times more phytoestrogen in it than the regular Whopper. And I thought, I know that's not estrogen. Phytoestrogen is a little bit different, but 16 million times more in each Whopper. Like what? I wonder what that does to you. Do you automatically get a membership card in Antifa if you eat that?
I don't know, but when you grow up eating nothing but breakfast cereals from Kellogg's, and then you get a big load of estrogen dumped on you, all you little boys aren't little boys anymore. You know?
Yeah.
So it's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. It's just absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
And with that Impossible Burger and the Beyond Burger, and there's another brand, I don't know if they're still on the market, called Uncut. They've all been part of Menus of Change at the Culinary Institute, and they've all been part of my kind of culinary career in Harvard as they were trying to introduce this stuff and we were working with it. And they were very, very clear on telling people that this is not healthy food. They made they didn't hide it that it was unhealthy, that it's got just as much calories and just as much fat and just as much sodium as you would a regular burger or a regular processed piece of food. What they want to do is they want to end meat consumption. They want to put the farmer down for some reason. And that's just all I can think of for that, because they were very, the sales reps, anybody that was representing these and having us sell them to, they said, make sure that you do not tell people that they are a healthier option, because they're not, like a cardboard Boca burger, Morningstar burger that's made of grains and whatnot. That might be a healthier option because you're not getting all that, you know, added fat and whatever, you know, whatever else is in there that they claim is unhealthy. There's nothing unhealthy about a nice lean piece of steak or ground beef or, yeah, or whatnot, you know, but you know, we've been conditioned to believe that that's unhealthy. So when you do get those questions about, oh, this is supposed to be healthy for you, it was told, no, it is not healthy for you. It's just like eating a regular burger. We just want you eating less meat because of the CO2 emissions that the cows are letting off and destroying the ozone layer, which is a total load of shit. Because I'll tell you about CO2 emissions. You know, I would rather sleep in a garage with the door shut with a cow than I would with a car run, you know?
Right, right. It's nuts. But since I've got you here, and since you are the chef,
yeah,
I'm curious to know if you can maybe go in and like explain to me, like I don't know how to cook because I don't, but like grass-fed beef, is that better than traditional beef? Is this a marketing gimmick? Is this some sort of thing to make you feel like this is a higher quality type of beef, but it's not? I mean, what is that? Tell me about that.
Yes and no. I think with a lot of the labeling that we have, grass-fed and is just another one of those labels, like organic is just another one of those labels, like the P for paleo is just another label, like non-GMO, these very, very distinct propaganda materials that we have on our packaging that just kind of shoot out to us that make us think that it's healthier. There's a difference between pasture-raised and there's a difference between free range as far as chickens are concerned, and the same thing with beef. Just because a cow is grass fed doesn't mean that it wasn't finished with grain, and a cow is to fatten it up. A cow is not meant to digest grains. There's a lot of people out there that are way better informed at this than I would be, but speaking from a chef's perspective and somebody who's buying the stuff and just kind of an amateur gardener that sits next to a farmer at the farmer's market, pasture raised is what you really want to look for. And what you really want to do is not get that shit from your local supermarket, your big major 10 company controlled everything in the aisles supermarket. You want to get to know your farmers. I know a few farmers here in New Hampshire, one guy in Massachusetts, and I can walk onto their farm any day of the week and I can say, hey, what's going on? Let me, you know, take a look around. Oh, I want to buy a half a cow. I can pick out the cow that I want to buy and go and visit that cow every week and watch it, you know, grow up until it's time to. So that's what I think you want to do. I think that everything else is just kind of a marketing gimmick, especially organic.
I was going to ask about next. Because I know that organic is totally... It like allows 100 different chemicals to be involved. I mean, it just seems like it's a real scam at this point.
The pesticides that they're using on this organic stuff, it's all derived from natural ingredients, right? But there's nothing natural about it. When you take a little of this and a little bit of this and a little bit of this and you mix it together, you get some sort of concoction that's going to kill bugs. If it's going to kill bugs, what's it going to do to me? What you want to do, and at least what I do in like my garden, I use cinnamon and I use cayenne pepper, and it drives the ants away. It drives the aphids away. So again, know your farmer. I think that's the key to it all, is know your farmer. And if you know a farmer who takes Bitcoin, even better.
Yeah, I know. You and me swap crypto stuff back and forth, talking crypto from time to time. So yeah, if you can find a farmer that'll take
that'll take Bitcoin and sell you half a cow in advance. That's going to be worth a hell of a lot during the coming apocalypse. What do you make of the food processing plants blowing up? I kind of mentioned it in the intro. It seems like a statistical impossibility, and yet here we are, and we've got all of these places that just seem to be catching on fire. But I have to be honest, I don't know what the normal amount of food processing facilities are that catch on fire each year, but something tells me it's less than what we're experiencing this year. It feels like it's being made to happen. I wonder what you're seeing in your neck of the woods.
We're seeing that because of this, we are getting shorted big time on all kinds of food. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing, you know, the inflation happening, I think, because of this too. I think it's definitely calculated. I think whoever it is knows what's going on, setting it up. Do I think they're all together in on it? No, but I think independently, they've been given the order to go ahead and do something because we got to make room for cellular agriculture, maybe. You know, why did Bill Gates buy up all this farmland? Why did he buy this plot of land in Arizona that he's supposed to build a smart city on? Is this going to be, you know, the new way for the smart city? So I don't think that like all these manufacturing plants got together and said, okay, we're going to do this. But I think in one way or another, they, you know, they got the order and they're collecting on the insurance money and they're going to build back better.
Yeah, they are.
You know.
When we did the food show on the Union of the Unwanted a couple weeks ago, you brought out your potatoes. Can you just explain how, like, to somebody that's never done this before, how do you do that? How do you grow potatoes? You were growing them in a bucket. What is the process for that?
So get yourself some food grade buckets, right? I just go to Home Depot and I look for the ones that are white and they say food grade on the side. Don't get the Homer buckets. And you're basically just taking potting soil. And this is what I did. Potatoes are super easy to grow. Other people might have, you know, more scientific methods to it. I throw shit in the dirt and see what happens. So I had these potatoes that sprouted because I had them sitting on top of the counter next to a bowl of onions. And the gas from the onion, when the gas from the onion lets off next to a potato, it causes the potato's eyes to sprout. Some potatoes may not sprout as fast as others, if at all, because a lot of the potatoes are hit with an inhibitor that they spray on them before they package them and ship them to the market. So if you buy organic potatoes, and this is one organic thing that I think may be, you know, true to being okay, is they won't spray the potatoes with that inhibitor. So the organic potatoes, you have a better chance of letting them sprout. Or you can go to your garden store and you can buy what's called seed potatoes, which are potatoes that are already sprouted, and you can find all different kinds of heirloom varieties and whatnot. I take the bucket, I bury them deep, and I walk away. I have a 5-tier rack that I bought at Home Depot that I have grow lights set up on, that I started all my tomato seeds, my pepper seeds and whatnot. And I just have the lights on. And when I would water my seedlings, any water that was left over in the bottle that I was spraying the seedlings down with, I would just dump into the potato bucket. And then all of a sudden little plants started popping out. And I go, that's cool. Let's keep it going. So I filled the bucket up more and then it started getting, you know, bigger. So then when we were on Union and I showed the bucket, I still had a little bit more to fill. I got about 8 potatoes from 2 potatoes out of that bucket. I just took it, I dumped it over, and they all came out.
How long did it take?
Oh, it takes it was a good few months that I had them growing. So the way you know is when they grow up, they're going to be nice, sturdy, strong, tube-like plants. Potatoes are tubers because they grow along a stalk of tube. And I lost my train of thought.
Well, look, I wonder how many, if you set about to like really grow potatoes, like you don't need to, like you proved that you can do it like in an apartment somewhere.
Anyone can do it. Yeah. Anyone can do it. I know a guy that all he does is grows potatoes in buckets outside all through the summer because he hates digging through the dirt. So what he does is when his potatoes grow, oh, this is what I was saying. When that stalk grows, that mm-hmm. tube grows, eventually it dies. it falls over, the leaves turn brown. That's how you know when your potatoes are ready to harvest.
Gotcha.
But he grows all his potatoes in buckets because he doesn't want to have to dig through the dirt. He just takes the 5-gallon buckets. Once those tops are done, cuts them off, throws them in his compost, dumps out the buckets, sifts through it, and then takes all the soil, gathers it back up, and, you know, refertilizes it and whatnot with whatever he uses, and starts the whole process again.
We have such a detached relationship with our food here in America. Like the average person like me, I feel like it's a skill we all need to pick up, learn how to do a little bit of farming. Have you ever done any microgreens?
Yeah. I had failed miserably at microgreens. Yeah. I tried it once, and believe it or not, what I did was I found a microgreen kit at the Christmas tree shops of all places. I don't know if you know Christmas tree shops. We got them around here, and it's like a discount store. And what you can do is, and what I like to do is at the end of the gardening season, like in August, September, I go in there and I buy all the plastic trays and little cells that I can plant my seedlings in at 75% off. So they had these microgreen kits there for 75% off. And I tried it out and I failed miserably. There's one company called True Leaf Market that specializes in like microgreen kits and everything like that. And actually, I think the Naked Gardener, Mike's wife,
yeah,
I think she's sponsored by them. I think the Naked Gardener is sponsored by True Leaf Market. They do an amazing job with microgreen kits, I hear. I haven't bought one yet, but because of my fail, I'm like, I'm just growing normal shit.
Yeah,
I'm just growing my zucchini and all that stuff. Microgreens could be a good side hustle too.
Yeah.
Take those to restaurants and say, hey, I got some microgreens. But you know, real quick, getting back to what you're saying about being detached, that's all by design.
Yeah.
Since the 1950s, the creation of the Hungry Man Dinner in Operation Mockingbird has pulled the family apart. And they're just continuing to tear down and rip apart traditions until they create this new tradition of everybody on the same page and everybody on the same level. And nobody is different from anybody else, you know, and they're skipping over the bugs. They're skipping over the Soylent Green and they're going right to lab grown meats, man.
What will your favorite bug be, do you suppose, Matt?
I don't know. Actually, I take that back. I do know crickets. Because I've had crickets before. So I was out in San Jose at a restaurant called Mexicali or Mexicali or something like that, right? San Jose is where the burrito was invented. So I'm like, fuck, I'm going out and I'm getting some burritos tonight. And we found this restaurant. They did the tableside guacamole. And one of the dishes was crickets. People have been eating this stuff forever. But for us, it creeps us out. Now, I'm not into like cockroaches and those big like palmetto bug type no. things and stuff like that. But yeah, they'll probably just grind it up into some sort of meal and mix it in with the lab-grown meat. I don't know. It's absolutely Jeez. Crazy.
I've been to China, man. I saw scorpions on a stick. I was like,
Yeah.
I'm not that hungry. I'll go to California Pizza Kitchen.
Pass.
Yeah, that's
because they're in China. Because that's totally normal.
You know? Yeah. Where's the best place for people to find you or support you or shop with your spices or all that good stuff?
So GraniteStateSpiceBlends.com is the website, and that has links to my Instagram. I have a TikTok too, where I like pour spices out and mix spices and take videos of food I cook. And I set it to some great 1990s boom bap era hip hop.
Nice.
So you got to check that out on TikTok if you're on TikTok. But yeah, that'll take you to the Facebook page. That'll take you to the shop. I have the shop at GraniteStateSpiceBlends.com. And for everybody that made it through this episode and my super fast talking, which I you know, obviously a little nervous. I'm sitting with one of the goats of alternative media.
Oh, stop.
I came up with a 10% discount code for this episode. So use code Jack Marius.
Jack Marius.
10% off. Jack Marius. One of the greatest skits ever to show on Comedy Central. It was awesome.
For those that don't know from the intro, Jack Marius Tactheretrix is from a Key and Peele skit where they are introducing the it's a fake skit about the football all-stars, and they're introducing them like they introduce before like a normal football game that's on TV, and one of the guys is Jack Marius Tactheretrix, and
that just had to go in the intro. And so I'm going to make sure that I write down, you know, in the show notes, there will be all the links to your stuff. And I will write the promo code Jack Marius so that everybody knows how to spell it properly. Yes. There will be no confusion. Yes. This is going to be fantastic. I say now everyone has to buy spices from you. They just have to. I mean, you can't buy them from the grocery store. You would be supporting a small business. You would get to use a promo code that is fantastic. Holy shit. I'm so honored that you chose that one. And and also I think, look, we're in this little world where we can support whoever we want. We can vote with our dollars. Like, why don't we just support the people that we like, with the people that see the world the way we see it, that are on the right side of things, that are fighting back against these maniacs. So I'm all for it. And I appreciate everything that you're doing. And I love that you came on Union of the Unwanted and were able to sort of fill us in on that. And look, I mean, I never thought food would be cool, or I never thought food would be a real big topic of discussion on this show. But man, has it become really important. And I think that we're all going to need to know a little bit more about it. We can't just like assume that the grocery stores are going to be filled with food, and if they are, they may be filled with poisonous, or they are filled with poisonous food. So it's up to us to sort of take advantage of this. You still doing the show?
No, we stopped the show. It was a choice between doing the show and starting this business. And I put everything into this thing wholeheartedly. The show, man, kudos to all you guys, you, Ricky, you know, Mike, everyone that has a podcast and that's been doing it, because it is friggin' work. My OCD started taking over, and my little thumbnails for the podcast episode, where I go into Photoshop and I crop heads out. It was driving me nuts. It was taking up all my time, and I really wanted to start this business. So yeah, we stopped the show, but Eric, my co-host, we're still good friends. We actually, I gave him 4 pepper plants and he brought me a half a gallon of raw milk. So we're doing some agorism there, trading stuff up. And that's really, Charlie, that's where it's got to go. So yeah. A lot of this is what I talked about with, you know, Harvard and Stanford being involved with this, Menus of Change in the Culinary Institute of America. It seems like gloom and doom, but if we keep thinking small and we keep thinking community, and not small where, like, you know, it's just you and your neighbor, but small, like groups of like-minded people that know how to help each other out. And even if you're across the country, maybe you can offer some advice to, you know, to somebody that, you know, just, you know, thinks like you and is on the same page as you. You know, get to know your farmers, buy Bitcoin, invest in cryptocurrencies other than Bitcoin, invest in gold and silver. We need to just do something, you know, and that's the only way we're going to be able to fight back. I say the best way to do it and to fight back are through random acts of civil disobedience.
Absolutely, man. I can totally get on board with that. I think that we owe it to ourselves. We owe it to our families to, if we know this information, we have to change our behavior. We have to act differently. We have to support the things that make sense to us. We have to disconnect from the things that are stealing our energy. That's Chef Matt Pierce, everybody. He's the best. We appreciate him coming on and dropping a ton of knowledge on the direction that the food industry is going. And if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. The website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter @macroaggression. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.